I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today is Dr. Candice Royal, who is a pediatrician and allergy specialist in private practice. And today we'll be talking to Dr. Royal about her career in medicine, the role of women in the health sciences, and what it takes to balance a life of purpose, parenting, and professional success. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
To begin with, you studied medicine at UCT, University of Cape Town, and after specializing in pediatrics, you then decided to go forward and do a subspecialization in allergology. What inspired you to take this path and especially focus on children as well as allergies?
That's a great question. Really always wanted to be a pediatrician. Remember doing my grade four Afrikaans mondeling on I want to be a pediatrician. And it really was something I always felt passionate about. Medicine is just such an interesting and diverse career path, but children really were at my heart for taking that path, and throughout training, really that was what I wanted to do and just resonated with my personal values and with the way I felt I could impact the world. Allergy was quite a different experience that came up actually quite unexpectedly. A lot of people ask me if I have allergies. Is that why I'm interested in it? And actually, it's not the case at all. After finishing up specializing in pediatrics, I went into private practice, and I just became overwhelmed by how many children I encountered that had allergic disorders and actually how little I knew about them. And it seemed to be the case amongst my colleagues as well. So we were sort of floundering with really common and chronic lifelong conditions that we actually knew very little about. And I think that's because so much of medicine in South Africa and Africa as the continent focuses around infectious disorders. And we spend a lot of our resources looking into those conditions, but especially amongst children, we forget that actually allergic disorders are the most common chronic disorders in childhood, and they actually get very little attention. So I felt that I really wanted to pursue improving my knowledge, to improve my ability to care for my patients. I really have a passion about walking a journey with children and their caregivers, and allergy really lends itself to that. So it's been a great field, and I've really enjoyed being a part of a smaller community of pediatricians, but hopefully a community that is doing good in an emerging and increasing burden of allergy in children in Africa.
Do you think that allergies are, or the incidence of allergies and people having outbreaks is increasing?
Yes, yeah, so there's very good data, you know, from first world countries that show initially there was a wave of increase in respiratory allergy, and then that's subsequently being followed by increases in atopic dermatitis, which we know is eczema, and food allergies are actually becoming increasingly common. And we see developing countries following a similar pattern now. So definitely, unfortunately, we have still little data from African countries, but definitely there is an emergence of a similar epidemic of food allergy amongst children.
I would imagine one of the challenges in dealing with little people is that they don't have the communication skills that adults have of saying what's wrong or what the issues are. So as a pediatrician, that's a whole other challenge that you have to address.
Yes, very true. So, as pediatricians, one has to become a very good observer. And it's amazing how much information one can gather just by watching a child play or interact with their caregivers, or just the way they sit even can tell you a lot of information. But sometimes you feel a little bit like detectives, which is great. But yes, children actually do express so much through their body language and through the way they behave or how they've developed. So yeah, there's a lot that can be gathered just from observing.
Yep. All these non-visual, or rather, all these non-verbal cues that come across.
Absolutely.
I know that in your practice and over your experience, you've treated people in South Africa, you've treated people internationally. Can you tell us about maybe a couple of cases that have impacted you on the diversity of different cases?
Sure. Yes, I'm fortunate enough to still be part of a Red Cross Children's Hospital, which is a public facility. So I have a clinic there once a week, and otherwise I'm based in private practice, which still lends itself to meeting people from very diverse backgrounds, and as you mentioned, even international clients as well. It's very interesting when one meets caregivers with children with significant challenges, how quickly having a privileged lifestyle becomes stripped down to actually, I just want a well, happy child. So I think that is one thing that I've really learned from interacting with people from varied backgrounds, is that when it comes to the core of being a parent, one just wants a happy, healthy child, and other things quickly become quite immaterial.
Yeah, honing down into what really, really matters. You mentioned once a week you spend time at the Red Cross Children's Hospital, but in addition, you're also running your own practice. How do you manage to balance between these two different environments? Because they are quite different.
Yes, so extremely different. One thing that must be said is medical school certainly is not business school. So there's a lot to learn when one ventures out into a private practice about actually being a business owner and managing your staff and making sure you've got a business that's functioning well. So that's one very different dynamic to walking into a clinic where things are in place, and your purpose is there really just to treat patients, which is why we trained as doctors in the first place. So that it's an interesting dynamic. I always say the Red Cross clinic is for myself. It's the time when I get to put on just the doctor hat and really give to the patients that have incredible need and often walked already a long journey before they're able to access tertiary healthcare. So it's a great privilege. I also have fantastic colleagues, so it's a time for me to talk through difficult cases and still feel part of a system. Whereas when one's in private practice, can feel quite lonely at times. So I really enjoy having a change of pace and having those two very diverse working environments.
What made you decide to venture not just into private practice, but into having your own business? Because it's a tough thing to do.
It is a tough thing to do, and I must say, I didn't do it easily, or maybe the right word is enthusiastically. It was something that I wanted. I really felt I'd been working in the private space for a while, and I knew how I liked to do things and how I wanted my patients and their caregivers to feel. Supporting parents and families is very close to my heart, and I wanted to create an environment where I felt I could be that to them. You can't see my office, but it's actually quite different to a traditional doctor's office. It's a free space with lots of different nooks and lots of things to play with, and couches and nice fat sacks and places to hang out. It's designed to feel very non-threatening and also to give parents a space where they can just actually, take off their guard and relax and open up. And so much of medicine is also just about sometimes we just need to chat things through difficult scenarios and just to feel supported. So I really love my space. It took me a while to make the leap because it's tough, right? And as women, I think our go-to is to doubt ourselves and to not believe that we can create a success. And looking back, I wish I'd done it earlier because it's been such a privilege for me. I love my work. I'm so happy. And it also gives me the ability to manage my time as I deem fit, which is again something as women that we often don't feel that we're entitled to. And we often stretch ourselves too thin in too many different areas. But I love being a manager of my time.
Everything you say resonates so powerfully, and the fact that you have taken this leap of faith, that if we think about the brand that you've created as Royal Peds, is looking at the customer experience dynamic, or the patient experience and the parent experience, and how that's something that you can control because this is your practice and the way that you cultivate that offering.
And you asked me about different patient cases, and I just, as we've been chatting, it just brings to mind a client of mine that actually came from the UK. And we often think of ourselves in Africa as being able to offer an inadequate service. And they came all the way from the UK to stay with family because they had a child with very severe atopic dermatitis, eczema. And when I say very severe, I mean a child covered from head to toe who couldn't sleep, couldn't feed, was growth faltering, miserable. I mean, we, for those of us who are mothers, can think back to days of, crying babies and how tough that can be. But this was really the most miserable child I've ever seen. And she cried the whole hour we were together. And their story was that they'd been in the UK, and because of how the NHS works, they just could not access an allergy specialist, which is crazy. And so they ended up coming to UK, and it didn't take us long to get that child back on track and identify some food allergies and just help support them. And I just think maybe we need to have a little bit more confidence in what we can do in the world.
And how is she doing now?
She's great. She's lovely. She's beautiful. The photos they send me are really incredible. You can't believe. Happy parents, happy baby.
Must be such a rewarding aspect of your job.
Yes, there are those moments when one really does feel like you've made a difference. There are obviously many moments that don't have the same kind of outcome, but it is great when one can achieve such a lasting impact on people's lives.
You're the first allergy specialist that we've interviewed on the show in our 12 years of operation. And one of the things that I found is that medicine sometimes, in particular disciplines, tends to be male-dominated. Can you tell us how you've navigated gender dynamics in your field, and also the changes and opportunities for women that you've observed?
Yes, I think that's an excellent point. I trained it at the University of Cape Town, who I believe was very forefooted in trying to change the gender dynamics in medicine. So in our class, we actually were mostly female. We were the majority, which is amazing. And I think wonderful, strong, obviously driven women. with passion for what they were training in, and I feel we were well supported mostly. I think the times that I felt discrimination because of gender was maybe more later in my training. As one becomes a specialist, I think there is a lot more pressure. I personally had children, well, I had my first child before I started specializing in pediatrics, which was very unusual and was not encouraged. Actually, I often felt quite frowned upon. And I had a very interesting moment where one of the head of the neonatal units actually confronted me and asked me how did I believe that I would be able to complete my training in pediatrics, because he felt as a mother that was going to be extremely challenging. And actually, I was 4 months pregnant at the time, so it was a very interesting moment when I divulged that I was going to be a mother again, and I definitely was as committed as anyone else to completing my training. But I definitely experienced less encouragement perhaps than my colleagues, as they felt maybe I was less committed, which definitely was not the case.
It's so interesting to hear these types of stories, because I think that a lot of the lenses that people use is that they judge you through their lens. They don't judge you through your lens, your capabilities, your support structures, and your ambitions. They're thinking it through their own mindset. And especially men.
Absolutely.
What does he know about having
Absolutely.
a baby?
Exactly. 100%. And I think we as women also maybe need to show each other a little bit more support than we do. I think we often feel like we're trying to prove to the men that we're as good, but we forget to actually reach out to each other and stand strong together. I've often experienced actually more from women trying to, bring you down, more so than even men, which I think is just really important for us as women with ambition, women who want to do things to be each other's friend as well, not just each other's competition.
Such a valid point. There's an amazing quote by Madeleine Albright, and she speaks about, and I'll always I'll get this wrong, but she talks about the fact that there's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women.
So true. Excellent.
So, given what you know in medicine, in the working environment, in the nature of working with people, what types of advice would you give to young women who are considering a career in medicine, pediatrics, or even specializing in allergies?
I'd firstly say medicine is an incredible privilege to practice. There's a lot of negativity in general in our country, but often when you talk to doctors, they maybe tell you it's not a good career choice if you want to have a family, and that's certainly not the truth. It is possible to do both, and it's an extremely rewarding, interesting career path. It's not easy. But it doesn't mean it's not achievable. So if medicine is in your heart, and it really must, it's a vocation, it must be a calling. I would really encourage women out there to follow that, and to believe that they can also be mothers and friends and many other things in life too. It's not all consuming. It is consuming, but it's not all consuming. Specializing is also tough. There are lots of exams to write, which you do while you're working incredibly hard. But again, it's achievable. It's interesting. You're giving to your fellow country members. So it's an extremely rewarding experience. Allergy is a weird and wonderful world. I'm very grateful that I went down this path. But there's very few of us, and we definitely need more African subspecialists in allergology. There's a huge and growing gap. So if it sparks your interest. It's an extremely fulfilling, and there's a lot of need out there, not just in clinical medicine, but also in research. There's a lot of need for our own data, our own treatment protocols, to even just know our own disease burden. So I would definitely encourage people to give it a thought.
You live a very fulfilling life, leading in the passion in your work and showing that you can be a professional success. You can be a mother, you're a mom of two. You can also have an academic hat. You're also a runner. So how do you manage the demands of your career and balance it with your family life? Tell us about some of the support structures that help make all of this possible.
Well, I'm very grateful, Ben, that I have a very supportive partner. My husband is also a doctor. He's a urologist. So he has great, I think, great empathy for the demands of being a business owner and a doctor and a parent. So I'm very grateful for that. Running is my crutch. So I think it's so important in life to identify a truly fulfilling sport or hobby or something that's just for you. And I guard that pretty religiously. I don't let that get taken away from me. So I think that's important. And it's important that we recognize we are allowed to have these things that give us a chance to process or even just have a break from the demands. My kids are fabulous. They do complain about having doctor parents, but I think they'll be all right. I also have great friends that I very intentionally engage with. And I think that's also really important in life to have women around you that believe in your career and are there to chat through difficulties. I have great colleagues too who, you know, we make intentional effort to support each other, which is, again, also really important. So I think young women out there entering demanding careers, make sure you find that person that really understands your own challenges and you feel comfortable to bounce things off each other and encourage each other. I think that's really critical.
Great words of advice. Thinking back to some of your active work, you work with the Allergy Foundation of South Africa. You've probably seen how public health shapes or doesn't shape and empower or maybe disempowers families. Do you see any gender dimensions in how healthcare information is perhaps received and acted on, especially when we think of mothers or caregivers as kind of being the first responders for children and allergies?
Yes, so my work in the Allergy Foundation of South Africa is I supervise all the social media content, and the Allergy Foundation exists to be a mediator between healthcare professionals in the world of allergy and the public. So, you know, we're really passionate about getting correct, meaningful information to the public, because there is, especially when it comes to allergy, there's a huge body of misinformation, unvalidated testing, unvalidated therapies that are proposed on social media. So we work really hard to really try and engage and support and advocate for patients and their caregivers. I do feel that so much of the burden falls to women. As you mentioned, they're the first advocate for their children, and they usually carry a very heavy load all of the while trying to juggle their other roles in society. So I definitely feel that we need to support women, especially as the caregivers that, you know, really take a huge burden, and to help them to be advocates for their children.
And thinking about channels of communication, do you find that social media is the most appropriate or any other channels to get the message across? And also to kind of cull the misinformation?
Yeah, I think we live in a world that uses social media as their advisor for everything, right? Your holiday, what you're going to wear, and medical advice. So people engage with social media, I would say primarily, and we found that through running AFSA. We do try and also have workshops and in-person trainings as well. That's primarily actually directed towards healthcare professionals, but we do some for the public as well, and those have been really great. We also try and engage with schools, because schools obviously where children spend a lot of their time, and it's a great way to access their caregivers as well.
And turning towards more of a personal perspective, one of the questions that I ask all my guests on the show is about some of the factors that they feel have contributed to their success. So sometimes people will talk about a particular person in their life, or faith, or values, or discipline. From your perspective, what would you say have been some of your key drivers?
So that having a supportive family that believes that you as a woman are able to have a meaningful career is so important, and has definitely been a major driving force for myself. Hard work, discipline, those are critical. Sometimes as women, we just have to be real about it. We do work harder. We have to not just be the same. We sometimes have to be better because we're always already on the back foot when those above us are looking around. So I do feel like one has to be incredibly disciplined. I think putting people in your life that believe in you and are willing to support you and are there to help you when you fall, is really probably, I would say, the most important thing. Surround yourself by people who speak good into your life.
To ask you as a little reflection as we've been having this conversation, how can we as women help change the narrative or help change the perspective that others have of us that we are not at an equal level of performance to them, that they're superior to us? What can we do to shift that thinking?
Thinking about that this morning, and what can we really do to change the status quo? And I think the one thing is what I've said before. I think that we as women need to support each other more. Often in my career, I've felt women around myself feel like we're in opposition instead of and coalition. And I think that we can really change that because, if we've supported each other, it's so much harder than to trip up. The other thing is that I really believe, particularly in Africa, that women are not supported when they have children. There really is major problems with the labor regulations and the early return of women to work, and just the way that any time taken out of your career for pregnancy, childbirth, rearing children is really frowned upon, and that needs to be changed because being a mother is such a critical part of society. The fabric of society really is woven by mothers, and so that role needs to be really elevated and supported, and that needs to be done, I think, as a structural adjustment.
I think that's such an important point. Literally, mothers are shaping the next generation.
Absolutely.
Reflecting back on your life, tell us a few pivotal moments when you were growing up.
Sure. I'm very privileged. I went to a great school, a girls only school, and I think women were really celebrated and told that we could do things. And I think that was really important in sort of my formative years to have that narrative, repeated throughout growing up attending school. That was great. I've had great moments of running, which have been really wonderful. I've done three Comrades marathons, and
Wow.
my husband and I are doing our fourth this year. So, I mean, that's really great moments of achieving things in a completely different area of your life. So I'm a firm sports enthusiasm, and I've passed that on to my children. I love watching them partake in sport and seeing that they also enjoy and have their own little dreams about what they can do. And I think it's also been a good example to them to see, their mum also gets up at 5 a.m. and, can do things and climb mountains. And yeah, so I think those have been great memories for me. I was very fortunate that my husband enjoys the same passion, and we actually started dating because we started running together. So it was very, very special.
And you spoke about that earlier about life partner choices of meeting someone and being with someone who complements you, and that you share those same values, and that they're going to support you, and likewise, you'll support them.
Absolutely. I think it's been so critical in partnerships and having children and facing financial stresses, as we all do at various points in our lives, can be tricky. And I think if you don't have the same goals and values, things can really break down. So when there's conflict about who's carrying more of the mental load, it's great when you have a partner who believes that you also have the right to have a career.
You've shared some of the things that you're hoping to give back to your kids. Are there any lessons that your kids have taught you?
Yes, the one thing I would like to say is, so I've got an older daughter and a younger son. They are very different. And the one thing I've really seen, which I've sort of alluded to as we've chatted, is my daughter's approach to things is often, I don't think I can do it perfectly, so I'm not going to do it at all. Whereas my son's approach is, I'm just going to give it everything. And it's struck me, and I've wondered if that's something that we've parented in them, but I actually think that it's more something that we as women put on ourselves right from when we're young. And I'm not sure of the reasons why it's like that, but I think if you can identify that kind of approach to our thinking and our belief in our abilities in whatever area of life it is, if we can identify it and take hold of it and actually put it in a box and say, I don't have to be perfect in everything, but I can try. And that's okay.
That is a lesson that I think everybody needs to hear. And who've been some of the strong female role models in your life?
Really, the women that I've met along the way in training in medicine, women that have done incredible things and have really given back to medicine. I think of professors, who have done incredible research and have really changed the academic landscape of South Africa. I can think of clinicians who have taught me just how to really approach patients with respect and dignity, and just have a great bedside manner. Friends that have very different interests in life, but are passionate about those areas, and also juggle being mums and doing other things. Yeah, I've been very fortunate in life to have met many wonderful, incredibly talented people who are doing what they believe in.
And lastly, as we close out today's show, please share a few words of inspiration or motivation that you'd like to pass on to women and girls that are listening to us.
I think really what I'd like to share is if there's a dream that you have or a goal that really captures your heart, don't be dissuaded from it, even if the climb to get there is difficult and perhaps the journey goes on a slightly different road than you initially intended it to. Just follow through on things, believe in oneself, and be kind to your co-workers.
Thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for sharing insights into your life, how you have really proven that women can have it all. It's been a pleasure to host you.
Thank you so much. It's been a great privilege, to have been part of this.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and that was Dr. Candice Royal, a pediatrician and allergy specialist in private practice.